Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Actually, talking out loud with somebody about ideas, I think you can say something and all of a sudden they'll just say something you never would have thought of. Like, and it would just keep building and building and snowballing. And I find that process way more creative than just being trapped in your own mind.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Balancing Acts. In this conversation, I talk to writer and director, Jack Howard.
Perfect. Hi, this is Steve Whiteley, comedian, actor, filmmaker, and writer, all-round ADHD creative. And welcome to my new podcast, Balancing Acts, where I talk to an array of creatives, ranging from comedians, actors, directors, all sorts. And we talk about how they find a sense of balance or not between their creative lives and their everyday lives, and how that has an impact on their mental health and beyond.
Balancing Acts is now made in association with The Comedy Crowd, who are a website and community that support independent comedy creators such as myself. I have a Comedy Crowd short, which is a 2-minute video, one of my characters, on their website. They showcase the best new videos on Comedy Crowd TV, which is comedycrowdtv.com, and across media platforms, so do go and check them out. Jack has written both sketches and short films for his YouTube channels, which have amassed over 80 million views. He's created 2 series for BBC iPlayer, and he's written and directed a pilot for what was formerly known as New Form, Ron Howard and Brian Grazer's company. He's also written, directed, and starred in 2 seasons of a sitcom, Jack and Dean of All Trades, which co-starred none other than Jessica Hines. As an actor, Jack has starred in Bulletproof for Sky and has also appeared in Drunk History on Comedy Central. In 2018, Jack was selected to be part of the Sundance New Voices Lab, and he's now a guest host on Mark Kermode's podcast, Kermode on Film. And all that, and Jack is still in his late 20s. This was a great conversation. I really enjoyed talking to Jack. We covered a whole load of ground. Jack described his positive lockdown experience, which was nice to hear. He goes into detail talking about how he feels like he knows himself better since lockdown and describes it as being a case of firmly being above water, and how the constraints of being in lockdown have really allowed him to be more creative and get back to basics in terms of making YouTube videos again. We discussed the idea of struggling with feeling guilty for switching off, which is something I know that I definitely struggle with, and trying to balance that with relaxing, particularly during lockdown. The challenges of getting motivated and just getting out of bed when you are feeling down or suffering from depression, particularly as a freelancer when, you know, you don't have a boss per se and you don't have to be in an office at a certain time. Jack describes how he's now found kind of routines that work for him. We talk about this idea of struggling with a lack of focus, and how lockdown has helped Jack hone in on his focus levels and productivity, and has helped sort of slowed everything down. And I guess that's probably the case for a lot of people listening. I know it is for me, in terms of, well, one, there's the absence of FOMO, you know, where there's only so many places we can be now because our options are somewhat limited. So we discussed that. And Jack also talks about questioning how he's perceived in his career and how that's helped him inform make decisions, such as leaving his presenting role on BBC Radio 1 in order to pursue his goal as a director. We discussed the transition from writing and directing short form to longer form content, and why creating
online content is such a great training ground if you are a writer and director. We also talk about the idea of not waiting for permission to become a writer or director and just go out, make something, and then essentially you are a writer and director, or writer or director, whatever, you know, you're pursuing. We also talk about his relationship with his cinematographer, Kieran O'Brien, and his dynamic and working relationship with his comedy partner, Dean. They've got their YouTube channel, Jack and Dean, and he describes how they have different perspectives and ideas and points of view, and how that really benefits their work and the projects that they collaborate on together. Jack dives in deep, breaking down what it was like directing experienced actors such as Jessica Hines on Jack and Dean of All Trades, and how he dealt with questions over the script from Jess, and what a great learning curve that was in terms of, I guess, sometimes actors are going to challenge your ideas or perhaps dialogue, and hopefully that can help lift the script to an even better place. We talk about the conflict of wanting to relax and also, you know, the need to be proactive. And Jack describes himself as a lazy person who forces himself to do stuff. Jack also describes the fear of not progressing in his career and trying to come to terms with the snakes and ladders aspect of the entertainment industry. He explains the responsibility of having an online audience and how it's affected his mental health, and how pivoting to make content that reflects Jack's passions, such as film and cinema, have had an impact on his views, but have also ultimately made him more content as a creator. We talk about our shared love for solo cinema trips, why being present with his thoughts, both positive and negative, has been a breakthrough for Jack. We talk about his love for ASMR and loads more. So I think you're going to really enjoy this one, particularly if you're in a sort of, if you're creating online content, or if you're a writer, director, or you're aspiring writer, director, then this is a great conversation to listen to. And obviously, if you're a fan of Jack and Dean, or Jack, then you're going to love this one. So as a side note, I should point out that the podcast is hosted on Acast, who are sort of podcasting platform, if you're not sure who they are. And they have now basically said that I'm eligible to place adverts on the podcast. I think it's going to be the beginning at the end, maybe one or two in the middle. I'm not sure. But this is something that I do need to do, because I do not make any money on the podcast. No, 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 no. In fact, I lose money every episode. I have an editor that I work with. And yes, so if you do hear that, then you know why that is there. It's there in order to really, hopefully, get to a point where it's going to at least cover the costs of making the podcast. We shall see. And as always, if you enjoy the podcast, please do rate and review it on Apple. It really does help. I've added a link in the show notes, which is ratethispodcast.com/balance, which should hopefully make it a lot easier to review it rather than having to search for the podcast on the Apple podcast platform. So enough about that, and over to Jack. Perfect. We've only briefly met once. I remember because I think we got a mutual friend in Cayenne. And I think that's how it came up in conversation, because I was working on a project in that building that Colour TV were working in.
And, yeah, in the B&B building.
That's right. Yeah, the B&B building. And I was just sort of making a few, you know, comedy videos and that kind of thing. And I think it just came up in conversation. We had a mutual friend in Cayenne. Who was on the podcast actually a couple of months ago. He's back in Southampton now.
Yeah. He's been there for over a year. Kyan used to live around the corner from me. Yes. We used to be play squash together, and
that's,
you know,
right.
We knew each other for a long, long, long time. But yeah. You know, in the last few years, we became a lot closer, literally, and also just like, you know, as a friend as well. And then it seems to be a recurring thing with me and people I get close to, is that they eventually, and I'm not going to turn this into a therapy thing, but they leave. My best mate, Tim, moved out to Los Angeles 5 or 6 years ago now, 5 years ago, I think.
Okay.
And so that became much more of a, so this is how I communicate with him most of the time. And then Kyan, after I sort of started to get to know him a lot more and become closer with him, he went back to Southampton, and all of a sudden I'd lost another person who was close to me. And I was like, why does this keep happening? Yeah. Why do all the men in my life keep leaving?
With Kyan, I feel like if I wasn't to pick up the phone to him, I'd never hear from him. He's not the most social of creatures.
Yeah, and I like that Kyan is, he's a very quiet and reserved person.
Yeah.
And I find that whenever he speaks, he's got something valuable to say rather than just speaking to speak.
Totally, totally. Like, I very much cherish our conversations. They're always, it's never sort of superficial, like it's never superficial with Kyan. You know, it's always like the deep and interesting conversations.
Yep.
And that's all due to him. Nothing to do with me whatsoever. but yeah, so yeah, always like to put in the connect the dots. And obviously we share an agent.
Yeah. How long have you been with Matthew?
Not long, actually. Only signed with him, I think, in November last year. You've been with him for a while, haven't you?
Yeah, since 2013.
Yeah. Wow, long time.
Yeah. So he's my first and only ever agent. Okay. So when he was independent, and it was because I just moved down to London and I'd made my first web series, which was called Project Library, which Kyan is in.
Okay.
And I made it with my best friend, Tim, who I just mentioned. What a coincidence. Okay. For some reason, God knows why, Ricky Gervais follows me on Twitter. And Matthew used to be Ricky's manager. And
I
DM'd Ricky and said, do you want a cameo in this show that I've made? Because I have, you know, I've gotten a bit more reserved as I've gotten older. But when I was younger, I definitely had no problem being like, I'll just ask. What's the arm? And I just would do that. And so I just DM'd Gervais and asked him if he wanted to cameo in this thing.
I love
and
that.
And he was very polite and kind and just sent me Matthew's email. And I messaged Matthew and Matthew very politely said, no fucking way. He's Ricky Gervais doing that. He ain't got time to do that. But then I asked him for a meeting and Matthew's motto is always take the meeting. And we met and got along and I've been with him ever since.
Great. Yeah. I had a similar story involving Ricky Gervais and he eventually signed with Matthew, and that was actually due to my mum. His office.
Okay.
My mum had a ceramic shop, and his office, him and Stephen Merchant's office, was opposite, and he used to walk through every day, but he would never buy anything. And my mum and he would sort of strike up conversation. One day, he said, "Look, Ricky, you never buy anything, so I want you to do me a favor. My son is trying to make in comedy, and he's written this pilot. This was about 5 years ago. So, would you have a look at it?" And Ricky said, is your son funny? And my mum, she paused and she said, he's funny when he doesn't try to be funny. And then he like did his sort of cackle and goes, just for that, I feel sorry for him. Look, I don't look at this stuff, but here's my agent's email. And it was Matthew. And this was actually 6 years ago. Yeah, about 6 years ago. And I sent it to him. And within a week, he emailed me like loads of feedback. And I wasn't expecting it, but that's my Ricky story as well.
Well, look at that. We've got more in common than we think.
Yeah,
and
we
also
really
we're just... two white guys sat in white t-shirts.
Yeah.
We've got not why why and we
talking
we're
about
just basically have the same opinions.
Yeah. So, yeah, how's your I know it sounds like such a cliche now, but
how's your lockdown
been for you, Jack?
I think ultimately it's been quite positive.
Okay.
And I'm very aware how privileged of a thing that is to say. I haven't been directly touched by coronavirus or racism. So I'm doing all right. And I actually think, I had my first therapy session for a few months yesterday. I've been doing therapy for a little over 2 years.
Okay.
And at the start of lockdown, we did a session over webcam and I wasn't into it. And it felt very weird to be like, oh, this is just my room. Welcome to this now, rather than going to the space to do it.
It's less personal, isn't it? Feels less personal.
It's less personal. And it was also like, because I'm so used to taking whatever I wanted to speak about somewhere else and then leaving it there, like leaving afterwards, there was like a process to it. Like there's an actual physical process to going in that room, talking about whatever you're talking about, and then you leave afterwards. Whereas when you do it on your webcam, you're just in your house, in your space. And then what do you do afterwards? You just still sat at your desk. It's just, I don't know, it just felt different.
Yeah.
And you're right, like the impersonability of it was not my favorite either. So I did my first session yesterday for like 2 months or so. And it was actually a really refreshing thing to be able to look back and go, look at all the progress I've made in 2 months that I wasn't aware of even. And I think that the best way of putting it is I think I know myself a little bit better than I did at the start of lockdown. And I'm feeling much more like I describe my sort of depression and all the rest of it as like being underwater, and that I've noticed in the last few months that my head has been quite firmly above. I'm not coming up for air and then going back under. I'm actually firmly above the water, and being under these constraints as well has allowed me to be creative, to sort of in the restrictions to think, what can I achieve in this time? Rather than, which is, I've been feeling a lot of pressure for the last year or two, maybe even a bit more, to try and like join that rat race and to progress quickly and to try and achieve the thing that I want, which is ultimately to be a director and to sort of meet the right people and find the right projects and to do the right thing. And lockdown has made that impossible. So I've gone, okay, back to basics. So I'll start making YouTube stuff again. And it's been really, really fun. And actually that sort of coincided with my mental health, is that I don't think I was making YouTube stuff when I was feeling really bad, because I didn't think my voice was worthwhile and all the rest of it. And actually, it's sort of been this weird sort of synchronization of my mental health getting better and also feeling more creative again.
That's fantastic. So that sounds like you've had a really positive experience. And I can really relate to that. This, you know, when you are going through periods of, where you're struggling with mental health, it can be really challenging where you're then trying to be productive and be creative. It can almost be like a vicious circle sometimes, because, you know, that has a knock-on effect on your productivity. And then you can sort of give yourself a guilt trip and a hard time for not being as productive as you should be, combined with...
I know a lot of people have been doing that.
Yeah, yeah. So, particularly during this time, it can be... it's difficult to know, isn't it? Difficult to navigate through, particularly because, we haven't gone through it before, anything like this, obviously.
Yeah.
So, it's sort of, I guess, it's been an interesting experience.
I think that's the thing as well. I don't want my summary of that to be like, oh, he's been doing fine. Like, you know, I think it's been positive, but there have been days where I've been like, no, I'm not doing anything. And struggling as well. To go, all I want to do is go and watch a movie, but I can't, I shouldn't, because it's 1 PM. I should do some stuff first, and then I should reward myself, when actually everything's topsy-turvy. So it's just about finding this new way of working and allowing yourself. Like I recently was doing some editing for somebody, and the day felt mental. So I was like, no, I'm going to go and switch off. And then I just worked in the evening, and there was no, what's the problem with that? But actually at first I was like, no, it's the day, I should be working when everyone's, you know, telling you you should. But I think it's just been about finding a rhythm, and it's taken a while, and it's still not perfect, obviously. Like yesterday I was overwhelmed and just closed the laptop and went and read for a bit and just let myself just sort of feel all the things I was feeling about what was going on in the world. And sometimes depression lurks out of its cave and takes over for a day and is like, all right, I'm going to need to just exist here for a bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, how have you been handling it?
Very similar to what you've just said, actually. And I think one of the big learning curves for me is being allowing myself to be okay with not being okay, and again, just sort of submitting to, you know, if I'm not feeling productive, what I usually do is I just push through. I'll just sort of be in front of my laptop, and you just try and push through, I'm coming to the realization it doesn't work, particularly if you're doing creative, particularly comedy. It should be an enjoyable experience. And so if it becomes sort of this thing of gritted teeth, I don't know how healthy that is. And I don't know if you're going to do your best work either. So I also think
that we've been told over and over again that writing is a job. You get up. And you push through and you do what you can, you allocate time to it. I think we've been told that many, many times. And also because creativity is so abstract that we're all looking for a routine of how to make it work for ourselves. And we look to people that we admire and we try and emulate their processes. And actually, it doesn't matter. Like, the process is however you feel most comfortable creating. And there is an external and an internal pressure to show up and to do it, even if you feel like you say gritted teeth and pushing through it. And I become like tunnel visioned to like, no, you need to achieve this before you can do anything else. And I don't think it works either.
No, it's like a fine balance, isn't it? Because there's that saying where, you know, the pros show up and they do it every day, and you can't just sit there and wait for inspiration to hit. There is partly that. So I guess it's finding like a middle ground, you know, a balance between the two, figuring out a way to navigate through it that works for you. Did you have a sort of a specific schedule or structure to your day prior to Corona and lockdown?
No, not at all. I actually think that the limitations and the slowing down of life since lockdown has actually been really good for me, because I think the widespread canvas of you can do whatever you want with your day. You can go here, you can go to have a meeting over there, you can then dash over here, and you can be dashing all over London to try and get some. And it makes you feel like you're being productive because you're constantly moving. When actually, I don't think I was getting any more done, really. I think I was moving more. But I don't think that meant I was more productive than I have been in this time. I actually think that the reason why this has felt more positive to me is because I've actually been able to sort of take it step by step and be able to go, what can I achieve rather than what do I think I should achieve? Mm-hmm. So yeah, before this, I was starting to feel a little bit better in terms of I was exercising multiple times a week and trying to find like balance in terms of that. But I was also like in quite a bad place pre-lockdown. So like just getting out of bed was becoming a little bit of a struggle. Like just like the idea of I was having to sort of pep talk myself to sort of, now you get out of bed, get out of bed, get out of bed. So I was having to do that type of stuff. And because I'm a freelance person, there was no external pressures. There was nobody waiting for me to turn up to work. There was nothing like that. It was just all on my own shoulders. And that was quite hard to find a routine, especially when you don't, in those moments, feel too worthwhile. You don't feel like, well, it's not worth showing up because who cares? And so sometimes I'd crave external pressures to sort of force me into a routine. But actually, I found that because of the lockdown situation, I've been able to find personal routines that I, even if it is just eating and then washing up afterwards and just taking a little break away from stuff, because you can't order in food anymore. Like I can't carry on and power through and then order a pizza or something and then just carry on. I have to pause, move away and go and do something. Just even that has become a routine that I've started to appreciate a lot, because it gives me just a moment to just sort of come out of it a little bit and take some time away. But yeah, I've never been a routine person. Have you?
I've talked about this on the podcast before. It's something that I've become more accustomed to as of late. I read a book and roll my eyes back in my head when I know that I'm repeating myself, because I said this before. But I wrote this book at the beginning of the year called The 5 AM Club, and the whole ethos was get up early and start early and time to have sort of pockets of the day. So you do.
Did you say you wrote this book or you read this book?
Oh no. I'm nowhere near talented enough to write a book. It's it's a book that I read. I was recommended to it by somebody else. And it's the idea that first 90 minutes of your day should be working on your most creative projects. So ideally you're at your desk by around 8. I have not stuck to this over the last month or so. Completely fallen off the wagon. And then you have 10-minute breaks, hour 10-minute breaks. And what I used to do, and I still, I'm guilty of sometimes, is jumping from project to project. And so I might be working on something and then suddenly I'm answering an email. And so there is a real lack of focus there. And I don't think it's good for your mental health. Well, it wasn't good for mine, because it's almost like
sounds very familiar to me.
Right, yes. It's almost like being addicted to adrenaline. That was what my therapist said, literally just regurgitating what she said. And so I find this is more of a calmer approach now. And it's still, I think, I think one of the things that I've really realized during this time of lockdown is how much our habits are ingrained in us, and how strong those habits are, and trying to break them is a real challenge. And this for me has been one of those, one area that I'm trying to come at from a different approach. And I can see the positive results, but regardless of that, there's still an element of self-sabotage within me.
Oh, totally. Yeah, self-sabotage is a huge thing. And what you were saying about jumping from project to project, I think that's what I've been guilty of too, to the point where actually, again, the lockdown, the sort of boxed in nature of this, of what can you achieve in this time. I'm somebody who since I was a kid, has whenever I've had a creative idea, I've made it and then it's been released on the internet for people to see. And only a few times have I had projects where it takes a while for it to, you know, be seen by somebody. And that I've always found that very frustrating. But something I've definitely gotten used to. But actually, to go back to that sense of this is the thing I'm focusing on, I'm going to get that done, and then I'm going to focus on the next thing, one thing at a time. I've just completely reminded myself how much better of a process that is, but also just how much it helps me focus. It's obvious, really, but it helps me focus specifically on that thing, and so I'm not spinning plates. And I think that I find that just even things like making lists and things like that, I'm just finding myself taking stuff out of my head more, so I don't have to, like, it doesn't feel like it's buzzing around, and I'm actually able to take one thing at a time. And it, again, it makes me think about the lockdown situation, and I do feel a little bit like I'm repeating myself by saying it's slowed everything down. It's really slowed life down, and so I'm actually able. It feels like the conveyor belt has slowed down. I'm actually able to just take things off, have a look at it, and then put it back. Or put it elsewhere. I don't know. I've lost the metaphor, but it, you know what I mean. It's just everything just feels a little bit more manageable.
Yeah, I get that. Do you think it's also part of the challenge is being? Again, I've used this phrase before, but being a multi-hyphenate. You know, you're an actor, writer, and director, so you're spinning lots of plates, not just in terms of different projects that you're working on, but within those projects, you're wearing lots of hats, aren't you? Which in itself can be quite it's a challenge, isn't it?
It is, and it's also, I know that I want to focus mainly, like, I know my ultimate goal is to be like, if I was to knock down those hyphens, I want to ultimately be director.
Has that always been the goal from the off?
I think it has, yeah. I think about my mom. My mom told me a story once about her. She was like in Asda or something, and I was finishing school, and somebody said, like, so what's Jack going to do when he's finished school? She was like, oh, he wants to be a film director. And they were like, okay, but what does he really want to do? And she was like, he wants to be a film director. Mm. And she'd always had that confidence that I would do it. And I think she even said, like, someone's got to do it. So why not him if he wants to do it? So I think it always has been the ultimate goal. And to get there, I've always been quite specific about what I do and how I'm seen. And that's something I've been really, like, I've struggled with for a few years, is like, if I do this thing, are people going to struggle to see me as a film director if I'm a presenter for Radio 1?
Right.
You know what I mean? So, like, I used to do that and I left because I didn't think it was going to lead me down the right path. But ultimately now I'm like, should I have done that? Should I have, like, cast aside that opportunity because it wasn't giving me what I wanted immediately? But it's one of those things where I think about the people I admire and what they do and how they get to where they want to go. And I don't see them as radio presenters because they didn't do that. You know what I mean? Whereas actually nowadays, there's someone like Donald Glover, and I know he's an anomaly. Like, not everybody can be like him. But he is a comedian, a writer, an actor, a director, a musician, you know what I mean? Like, a stand-up comedian. He's done everything. And I actually think that it's more modern these days for people to express themselves through the medium of which it makes the most sense. And, you know, Charlie Brooker went from being a journalist to being a director, you know? And it's like, what a transition that was. No one saw that coming. But, I think that it's to me, everything I do is, if I'm interested in it, I'll definitely take a stab at it. And I ultimately try and approach everything as, well, I'm going to do that in order to get to that thing. So if I have to write my own scripts right now, because nobody's going to come to me and go, we want Jack Howard to direct this, because that's not going to happen. But I'll absolutely, like, keep coming up with my own ideas and collaborating with other people to write stuff so that hopefully one day somebody will come to me and go, I think you'd be good to direct this. That's ultimately the goal.
Yeah. And have you found sort of the transition from having historically gone from making short form content, which obviously you still do as well, but now moving into more of a longer form medium, has that sort of had its own challenges along the way to transition into that sort of mode of being, in terms of, okay, so let's say traditionally as a director, the thing is that as you were saying, we're in modern times, there isn't necessarily a traditional route. But let's say for filmmaking, it might be you make X amount of short films, you submit to short film festivals, and that is how you might earn your stock as a film director. Whereas you have gone mm-hmm. from the YouTube world. Have you found that a challenge in terms of establishing yourself? Now it's like, look, I'm a writer director, and I want to start directing. I want to be directing more long form projects.
Totally, yeah. Like there's multiple reasons why it's challenging. One of which is because of how I'm transitioning from one thing to another, and the other is how people view me. Which I can't help. But so writing longer form stuff has definitely presented its own challenges and all the rest of it, because telling stories through short form, I'm pretty good at it now, and I know how to establish character and narrative and get it and to explore it in 5 minutes and to do it well and to leave it on a punch, whether that be the funniest thing or whether it be leave it on a poignant moment or whatever. I know how to do that, and it's quite not easy for me, but it's certainly like a muscle I can flex quite easily. And going from that type of storytelling to writing half-hour comedies or even feature films, like it's just a different set of like rules. So you're just playing in a different sandbox. So learning about that has been exciting and challenging, and it takes time, the way that anything does. But also, I've had a couple of opportunities to go into meetings to potentially direct for upcoming shows for quite well-known broadcasters. And there's always a thing that comes up of, do you think you'll be able? Do you think you'll be like ready? Do you think you'll be able to handle it? And I'm like, yes. Like actually being on set and directing, for what I've done, is no different. To it just happened to have ended up online, whereas what you're talking about is ended up on telly. But because I haven't got a television credit, you know, in the traditional sense, you think the job is different, but actually it's all the same stuff. And actually being on your set where there's more people involved and I don't have to hyphenate my job as much, I actually probably will find it easier.
I mean, that's a luxury, isn't it? That you know, I think the great thing about creating content on YouTube and other online platforms is it's such a great training ground, and you do wear so many hats because there are budget restrictions. And so then you have to think on your feet and how you can approach decisions in a creative way. So taking on all those skills, when you then you're on this set and suddenly you're like, oh, I've got my own first AD and what a second? I've got a third AD. You know, then it's kind of like, oh, I can literally just focus on directing.
Yeah. And being able to sort of concentrate on the minutiae, which I think is actually where the directing shines, rather than like getting everything that you need just because time's, you know, against you. You actually are able to focus on story and character and motivation and all those little moments that are going to bring out truth in something. And I, you know, we're two people that make comedy, and I think that we will agree that the best thing about comedy sometimes is the unexpected little looks or moments or just little bits of improvisation that you might be able to get out of playing with the moment rather than just getting it as it's written and moving on. I think that the most exciting bits are when you're able to be comfortable in a moment, and you're not able to do that if you're wearing loads of different hats. And actually, I've had moments on set when I was making our series a couple of years ago, which was called Jack and Dean of All Trades, when I was directing that. Thank you, man. Thank you.
Enjoyed it.
Kyan's in it.
yeah, I noticed that.
Thank you very much. You know, there's so much I would change about it now. And as a director and stuff, I certainly feel a little bit more experienced in terms of what I feel like I know and all the rest of it. But I'm certainly super proud that we made that in our early 20s and we got that
amazing,
you know, made the way we did. And it looks more expensive than it was. And there's lots of things that I think are positive about it. But when I was making that, I remember being on set and my eyes were just constantly moving around. Like I was never able to join the actors when they were just having fun in between takes, but I was also never really able to just join the crew. Like I sort of sat in between everybody. And I was constantly thinking about what was coming next, what we'd just done, what I needed to get, because I was also going to be in the edit. And I was thinking about like the time pressures and my character and how I was going to be in a scene and what the, all of it at once, whereas if I was able to just knock a few like hyphens off of that role,
sure,
it would have maybe been a, it would have been a different show. But you know, it's something that I would like to do in future projects, is take on less stuff. But right now it's just sort of easier to do, you know. I watched Do the Right Thing last night for the first time, Spike Lee's film.
Brilliant.
And he doesn't want to be an actor, but he's really good in it. But he had to be in it because he was like, I can't afford it or whatever it is. Yeah. And, you know, I need to get this made, so I'm going to do all these things in order to do it. Steven Soderbergh. Oh, no, there it is. Steven Soderbergh is one of my favorite directors, maybe my favorite director. And that film, that poster that I have in the background, is for Sex, Lies, and Videotape. And he recently did an interview where he said, I mean, that was his first film he made when he was 26. And the reason why, and it won the Cannes Film Festival and all the rest of it. And I don't know how you do that at the age of 26. That's insane to me. Crazy, but he did an interview recently where he talked about how he's written a sequel to it. And I'm very excited about that. But he also said in that something that really struck a chord with me, and I think will with you maybe, is when he said, I never considered myself a writer, but no one can stop you from sitting at a keyboard and typing things. So I just wrote things and then wanted to be able to get to the point where I wanted to make a movie, rather than considering myself like a writer or a script writer or anything like that. He just did it so he could make something.
Yeah. And I think that's a really important point, not to wait for people's permission to do something.
Mm-hmm.
If you go out and you do something and you direct a short film, you're a director. You know, you've gone out there and you've directed something. And
especially now, which is why it frustrates me when people do have a stigma about where the stuff that you make gets put.
Yeah.
Because it shouldn't matter, really. Like, it's all just, we're just creating stuff. We're all just making stuff.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, what really strikes me about, you know, the content that you guys make, the videos you make, is that it's really high production value. And I'm sure you're working with budget restraints as well. I mean, I love some of the moments where you've just got these the choreographies. Do you have a choreographer on those videos, or do you just come up with those with that all yourself?
For what? Sorry, so, for like.
So in the first episode of Jack and Dean of All Trades, when you've got the baguette fight. Yeah.
Yeah. So we had a fight choreographer for that. Yeah.
You had a fight. Oh, did you? Okay.
Yeah. So we
have they just come up with this?
So we
I need to really up my game if so.
We for that episode, like, so that was based on, again, Kyan keeps coming up, man. Kyan and I, a few years ago, actually it was probably 2011 when we filmed it, and it probably came out in 2012. We made a great sketch called Violence Begets Violence.
Okay.
Which I think he credits his dad with the amazing title, but it essentially is us coming back from the shops and then it turns into a samurai sword fight but with baguettes. And it was the first time me and Kyan had properly worked together, and our DOP, Kieran O'Brien, who used to shoot for Kyan all the time and then became the YouTuber DOP, who is brilliant and has really, really raised the game on not only my work, but so many other people's work in terms of facilitating a vision. Like the idea of, I want this to do this. He is able to sort of see what I want and actually translate it into practical terms of cinematography and lighting, rather than being an amateur. He's a true pro and a genius and completely underappreciated for what he does and what he has done for short films and stuff on YouTube.
Do you collaborate with him on all your projects?
Pretty much everything. There's only been a couple of things where I haven't, where I'm very pleased with the cinematography and those things as well, because there are other cinematographers that are good, but there's something about the relationship I have with Kieran and what he's able to do that I think he's just outstanding. But for that fight specifically, like there's a choreographer called Joe Golby, who had worked with us on, there's a YouTuber called Tom Scar who done like some action videos back in the day.
Yeah.
And I edited quite a lot of them, but I directed one called Sniper Pug, which was really fun to make.
Yeah.
And Joe had worked on that with the stunt people and all the rest of it. And because we were doing this thing, I wanted to bring in a bunch of people who had been with us along the way who maybe hadn't been paid as much as they were worth and been like, okay, we're doing a proper thing this time and right. I want to do it properly. Yeah. And so, yeah, he helped us sort of come up with the choreography for that fight. And then to translate it to the space itself was very, very fun. And there's some stuff that was cut out as well. Like there was supposed to be something where Dean went across a table and all the rest of it, but it was all about time and all the rest of it. But yeah, it was a really fun one to do. And you know, just fun to just go like, all right, we're just playing with Star Wars tropes, but it's baguettes. let's just have a laugh. I'm really, really proud of that stuff in a really silly way.
It's really great. And obviously, I mean, that's how you started off in a sort of, I guess, a double act with Dean. And and I know you still work together now, but obviously you're doing a lot of your own projects. Do you have a preference? Do you prefer working or collaborating with Dean or with other people? Or do you enjoy sort of the freedom of working your own projects?
I enjoy being able to go back to the Jack and Dean thing whenever we have something that we think is good. Mm-hmm. It's always been it's always been a way I would describe myself. I'm definitely part of Jack and Dean, and that is something I'm very proud of. And I think it's a dynamic that works. It's like a classic straight man, funny man thing. I think that Dean's way of thinking is so outside the box. I think the reason why we work as well is we both think the other one is funny. Mm-hmm. Like, and actually we both think the other one is funnier than ourselves. So we'll end up complimenting each other quite a lot for something we think the other one has added that made it better. And it's always different stuff. And it's a good working relationship. It can be frustrating at times, like any other one. Like sometimes I feel like I need to sort of like slap him into shape to be like, come on, like let's do something. But I also love being able to go and do my own thing. And he goes and does his own thing as well. And we always end up sort of coming back to each other when we have something that we want to make, be that short form or long form. Like our sensibilities seem to marry up, but also we have quite different ways of working and different tastes in things. Like Dean has become way more interested in gaming and all that sort of stuff. And he's in terms of movies and stuff, he's way more interested in fantasy and horror. And I'm way more interested in something that's grounded. And I'm way more interested in action than he is. And so actually we're both bringing different perspectives of what we want to create to our own work. And we won't let something go over the finish line until we're both very happy with how something has been, with how we've collaborated on an idea. But I also, just in terms of the way I like to work, I much prefer working with other people. I find writing alone incredibly lonely, and it can trigger like depression and stuff in me, and frustration, and I get in my own head and it gets quite cerebral, and I don't like that space, and it can make me quite tense. And actually talking out loud with somebody about ideas, I think you can say something and all of a sudden they'll just say something you never would have thought of, like, and it would just keep building and building and snowballing. And I find that process way more creative than just being trapped in your own mind. Perfect.
Hello, sorry to interrupt in the middle of this insightful conversation, which I'm enjoying, I'm sure, just as much as you are. But I need to give you guys a little reminder. If you like this conversation, this episode, if you like Balancing Acts in general, then please do subscribe to us, rate and review us, because it makes the world of difference. And the more reviews we get, the more rates we get, the more people can discover the podcast and we can make it go viral, whatever that means. Okay, back to the chat.
I do prefer sitting alone and typing where no one can watch based on all the stuff we've said. But then after that, I want to go, let's have another conversation so I can go back to the typing again. But that's not the luxury you have all the time, because you can't always, you know, I expect people to come and work on your ideas, especially for free and all the rest of it. But I certainly prefer collaboration. And it's why I prefer directing to writing, because you're on set with people and it's like a family dynamic and you're all funneling towards the same singular idea. And I love the process of like different people throwing in different ideas, and you get to be, as a director, the funnel that allows, or the sieve, or whatever the correct metaphor would be, to let the right ideas into whatever you're making and catch all the ones that you don't think work. Whereas when you're alone and you're writing, I don't know, I find that I just get too in my own head about stuff. But what about you? How do you like to work about that? I mean, on that sort of stuff?
I'm pretty much bang on that. I find, you know, writing on my own, yeah, as you said, it's very solitary. Sometimes, you know, I just push stuff out, whatever's in my brain, I'll push it out. But it's just more enjoyable, isn't it, when you're collaborating with someone else? And like you said, you have different styles and you have different perspectives and point of views. And so that's only going to strengthen a script because, you know, you're going to, hopefully it's going to complement each other and you're coming at from different directions. And so ideally make the characters and the dialogue and the whole story more interesting than if it's just coming from a singular perspective. I have written stuff of my own, but in terms of the enjoyable and that's something I'm really thinking about at the moment is, why am I doing these things? You know, similar to you, you know, there's a drive there. I wanted to reach a certain point. There's certain things I want to do in my career, but at the moment I am questioning, well, what do I want to do? I want this to be enjoyable. This needs to be an enjoyable experience. And I do crave for that sense of community as well and connection, which you get on a film set, which, you know, I just absolutely love. And I was just thinking as you were saying that, it's I find once you've wrapped or even once you've finished a day's shoot, it's very similar to having done a stand-up set. It's sort of you have all this adrenaline and then you come home and you're just sort of left with this, it's like a bit of a come down almost.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I can very much relate to that. And how have you found experiences, like, for instance, on, you know, on All of All Trades, Jack and Dean of All Trades, directing someone like Jessica Hines, you know, someone that ilk, and, you know, you're a young guy who, like as I said, you haven't directed TV at that point. Was that a challenge? Were you nervous, or how did you deal with that?
I she was the person I was most nervous about working with, because we had some good people on that show, like Alex Lowe and Emily Joyce and Jacob Anderson. But that was into the second series with Jacob, and we'd become mates, and so we had like a rapport and all the rest of it. But yeah, working with Jess, I didn't know she was going to show up on the first day. And I was like,
really?
Honestly, I was still like, I hadn't spoken to her, which was not ideal. I was hoping to have met her or to at least have exchanged, you know, just, you know, have a phone call or something, but we hadn't had a conversation.
Wow.
So I hadn't spoken to her about this character that we created that felt very personal to us. Like we had, we'd read the scripts out loud and we had a voice in our heads and a rhythm of how she spoke. Like I imagined she plays a character called Marv, and I expected Marv to be Northern, like Manchester, and never expressed that to Jess, and she played it completely differently and better, like, and better than it was in my head. But what I liked about the process of it, the way it turned out, is that we shot her scenes, which are mostly in the office, I think in the first series almost entirely in the office, chronologically. So in the scenes themselves, you're seeing us, Jack and Dean, the real people, and Jack and Dean, the characters, get to know this woman they don't know. And I think you start to see, and so like this, almost like looking back at it, like as a director, and going, actually that works. You get to see that at the beginning there is an awkwardness, and like they don't quite work with each other yet. There's not like a dynamic and a rhythm. They don't fit well together yet. And as they get to know each other more, there becomes more of a dynamic between Jess and Dean. Like they're quite like very, very similar in terms of their personality types. They're both quite silly and quite clownish. And then me being the director who wants to get things done, and also the character who's a bit more stern and serious, like that all played into the dynamic. Something that really comes to mind was the first we shot in the first series, there's an episode where Dean fakes his own death to get out of a job, and Marv comes into the morgue to identify Dean's body. And there's a shot. It's such a good joke. It's a shot where she lifts up a sheet and she goes, no, it's not him. And then the guy goes, no, miss, it's this way. You don't have to identify all the dead bodies. And she goes, oh, good, because I don't know any of these. And then follows him, which I still love how she did it. And she just tried it several different ways. And I just remember her, because I'm not in this scene, which was nice. So I was able to just direct. Mm. And I remember her after a take was finished, she went, "Jack, was that funny?" And I was like, "Oh, she's asking me." Like she's reaching. I was like, "You're Jessica Hines. You know what's funny." But she was like making sure that it fit within what my vision for it was. So it was a challenge, and she's definitely a unique person to work with. She also challenged us. There's a scene, there's an episode where we are babysitters, and one of the jokes is that all babies look the same. And every time we say that, Dean says racist. And there was a bit of dialogue between me, Jess, and Dean where the language wasn't specific enough what the joke was, and she made it. She like stopped the shoot for us to have a conversation about specifically what is the joke, what are we saying, and we need to make sure that we're taking the piss out of the right thing and that the focus is on the right thing so that we're not actually making an accidental racist joke. And I really found that at the time quite frustrating because I knew what my intentions were. I knew I wasn't actually trying to make anything. I was just trying to make a silly joke, but actually really appreciated that conversation because it made me really think about what I was doing and what we'd written. It just helped. And she was a great teacher at that and at improvisation as well. And at being a young director coming in and being like, this is what I want. I need to get this thing for the edit. And then I know what the scene is, but actually letting her just go. And she loves to go, like letting her just play with it. But then at times figuring out how to work with her to sort of bring her back. Cause sometimes the scene wasn't about the big funny thing that she had to do. There's a scene in the second series where the whole point is that she's distracting a guard while we're going in to steal some guard uniforms in a prison episode. And she kept making the scene go further and further and further. And she was doing funny stuff. And it would have been easy to just let her go and be like, "Haha, this is funny on the day." But actually I knew that when I got to the edit, I was going to like, this is not going to do what we needed to do. The scene is about the tension of distract. It's the old fashioned thing of like, there's something happening behind somebody. Slapstick is happening while somebody's not looking and they're trying to not, you know, be seen. So I had to like let her go and then slowly reel her back in. And it was just about working with her and understanding the way that she likes to play with character and dialogue and stuff in order to get to that place. But yeah, it was a pleasure and I would love to do more with her. And yeah, it was definitely good training to sort of work with somebody of that. Someone who's that established and also that confident with what they're doing. And when I asked her to do something she didn't like or didn't agree with, she wouldn't take it. And she really? Would have a conversation with me. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So there was moments where I would ask her to maybe be a bit too cartoony and she'd be like, that she'd like to always be in the reality of something. And that was really helpful as well.
Had you had experienced that before? And
no.
In terms of previous, yeah. So usually when you are directing actors, they will pretty much do what's
well, it was because before that, it was mostly like friends or other people who had come from a similar background of just doing stuff on YouTube. So she was a proper actual actress who wanted to find the truth and the reality of everything, even if it was silly, which was a real, like, that's something that I really hold close now as something that I truly like to do is that, it's funnier if you play it real, even if it is silly.
Yeah.
And sometimes I asked her to go a bit too, like, can you say it with this rhythm or can you say it with it? Like, I would not parrot her, but I would certainly ask her to maybe be a bit more like a Simpsons character. Mm-hmm. And she would always be a bit, she would always sort of not debate with me, but she was sort of, she wouldn't just do as she was told. She would certainly like have an opinion on what she was doing.
Did you, the one that comes to mind is that? Or because like if it's something you're not used to, you know, and especially if something you've slaved away at for ages in terms of writing the script, you know exactly in your head how you want to be, and then the sort of they're questioning it. Was your? If I'm saying this from like my personal experience. I know what I was like when I first experienced it. I was like, I didn't like the feeling initially of someone questioning the words.
That was exactly it. It was certainly like an uncomfortable. So uncomfortable, and you also question like, oh. Have I done something wrong? Like, have I done something that's offending somebody? Sure. But actually it was just worthwhile having those conversations to get to the place that was best for it. Yeah. And I think whenever we definitely wanted something in a certain rhythm or a certain way, she would listen. Mm. But yeah, there was just sometimes where there was more of a conversation than I expected there to be about it. Sure. I think I was used to like, this is how it's written. You say it like that and then we move on.
Yeah.
Whereas actually she wanted to find things a lot more. And on that first scene as well, like that we ever did with her, there's a lot of improvisation that's in the final cut mm-hmm. Of the episode. And we took that with us. And so in later Jack and Dean sketches now, there are moments when we're like, okay, there's a moment here where we can play with it and we can find something else. And actually some of the funniest moments, I think, come out of that. So yeah, I as challenging as it was sometimes, and it wasn't like massively challenging. It's not like she was a diva or anything. It was all coming from a really good creative place. It was absolutely always for the best.
Yeah, that's a great training ground, isn't it? To sort of,
yeah.
So you know that now.
And I was 23, 24 when I was directing her. So wow. Like it was what a great way of like coming into it.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic. I listened. I watched, I think it was one of your latest videos, and you basically in the post of Have I the Answers, the title, the video is Have I the Answers.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And you're talking about something that I really, really, really resonated with me is basically you say that naturally you're a lazy person who forces yourself to do stuff. And I can really relate that. But for somebody that considers themselves to be lazy, you've got like an incredible output. Have you always had that drive, or has it been sort of like going back to this sort of where you say you're lazy? Is it sort of like you sort of bang heads with yourself, where part of you just wants to just do sweet FA, and the other part's like, no, we must do this now.
That sounds about right. Like I think that there is a conflict within myself that most days wants to just get up and potter about and do my own thing and be like, oh shit, I've got to do that thing, I suppose. But actually, there are some days where I wake up so motivated, or even in the middle of the night sometimes I'm like, why now? Like where I like want to sit and write something and or whatever. And I also even when I'm hanging out with friends and stuff, I'm just constantly, there's a little bit of me that's like switched on. So if somebody says something funny or interesting, I'll always like just secretly note it down. I don't know if that's like a thing that you do, but I'm certainly
all the time.
Yeah. On. Constantly just like, there's always just like, it's never off. It's always just slightly, you know, it's on the green sometimes.
Yeah. I love a voice note.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah, I've got a few of those. Weirdo. I've got a few of those that I haven't even listened back to. I'm like, I'm going to note this down.
It's great. I did that. I did one. I think it was during lockdown, just sort of, you know, the boredom was at peak mm-hmm. levels. And so I just sort of scrolling through voice notes for the last 5 years. 99% of it was utter rubbish. And I had no idea what the hell was going through my brain at that time. But every now and then you come across something like, oh, actually, that could work for that project.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I've got like a notes folder that's been on there for probably 6 or 7 years, probably a bit more than that, since I was at uni, where like there's things I remember noting down at specific locations when I was in Lincoln.
Yeah.
And I can remember noting them down. And then you just scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll. And it's just any little idea that I have. Because then if I'm in a situation where I'm like, what could happen here? I can just go into that notes and see if something fits.
Yeah.
But to answer your question about, I do think that I am able to look at the things that I've done and be very proud of what we've achieved in the small amount of time that we've got. I think what I'm conscious of, I'm very conscious of the fact that I don't want to have peaked in my mid-20s. I want to be constantly progressing to the next thing. I want to be constantly climbing a ladder. And I think for a while, I think when I was making that series, I thought that I was, you know, I moved from one thing to the next and I was just leaping and I just thought that would never end. And then I learned pretty quickly, that's not how it goes. And so what I think I'm still coming to terms with and making peace with is that this industry is a game of snakes and ladders, where you can go up at one point and then all of a sudden you'll be back down and you're going, hang on, haven't I done all this sort of stuff before? And I can get quite egotistical and think, but I've been proving myself and proving that I can do stuff at a good level for a long time. I've worked with these people. I've done these things. I've worked with this amount of budget. You know, why is nobody taking it seriously? Why does nobody want? And I can get in quite that space when actually it doesn't matter. That you just do what you do. You do what you're interested in. And if something works, it works. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. And if somebody's interested, they are. Doesn't mean no one owes you anything. So there's quite a battle happening constantly And it comes out as, I think I'm quite lazy, who forces myself to do stuff. But because I've never done anything else, I've never had a quote unquote real job in terms of, I've always done this. I've always been on YouTube since amazing. I was a kid. It is kind of insane. And
it is amazing. And I mean, it's something else I want to touch upon, but going back to that, what you were saying, you know, you're waiting to this idea of trying to prove yourself, etc. There was also sort of like this, I guess, culture shock, whereby everything online happens at such a fast speed and at your own pace. You know, you're completely in control of your output. But then when you suddenly move into, I guess, the traditional entertainment industry.
Yeah. And everything takes a year.
I mean, I couldn't believe it. When I started getting more into that world, just how slow the decision-making process is. For someone like you, who, you know, you're a motivated guy and, you know, you're in charge of your own destiny, now suddenly to have to be waiting, twiddling your thumbs, is a challenge. And I think also part of the challenge is sort of this sort of fine balance between pushing and wanting to move ahead, but also having a degree of sort of just being able to let go and not be too... too tight and too caught up in the outcome and like, oh, you know, what's going on with this project? I'm talking from experience. I'm saying I know that's what I've been like, and it's only
absolutely the same.
Yeah, the last year where I've started to be like, okay, just people tend to gravitate in a way to people who are sort of, they have a sort of, you know, they're talented and they have a sort of a good, you know, strong output, but also have this element of like, I don't give a fuck attitude.
Yeah. Know? Yeah,
the right kind of don't give a fuck. Like,
yeah,
you can take me or you can take it or not. I don't mind, man.
There's something about like someone being too keen.
Yes, sort of a little that's bit like, exactly right. It. Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's mental, isn't it? Because I actually think I gravitate towards people who are really keen to do something. Because if they're showing an enthusiasm for something, I find that a really attractive quality to want to work with somebody like that, because it's passion.
Totally.
But actually, you're right. I think that. Going back to Donald Glover, I think he is a little bit like take it or leave it. Like, and there's something cool about that as well.
Yeah, so it's just an inner confidence. So having
I
grown up,
I do not have.
Yeah, I mean, I totally don't. I totally don't. All cloaks and daggers. Going back to sort of you growing up, then on, you know, having only worked up till sort of recently, you know, in terms of the YouTube side of things, I wanted to ask you about. How you've handled the attention over the years, and like how that has affected you from sort of a mental health perspective, having been so, I guess, yeah, been so sort of like you and the connection with your fans and you sort of starting from nothing and then growing with this online audience and the responsibilities that come with that. Has that been something that has affected your mental health throughout the years?
I think it has. And I think there's only been a few things that I've recently being able to express, and I don't think I've been able to be aware of them until actually having some separation from it. So I think as a young person being thrown into that world where you are flown to Florida or to Los Angeles to go to these events where you're there specifically because people are going to come meet you, that's like already bizarre. And the way that I would describe it or had described it previously was that when people go like, you know, if you meet somebody and their friend doesn't know who you are, their friend will be like, are you famous? And my answer has always been depends who you ask and depends what room I'm in. Mm. And because I can go to an event here in the UK, which is called Summer in the City. I can go to that event and, you know, a large majority of people might know who I am. But I can go out and nobody cares.
Yeah.
So that's kind of always been the way it's been. So I've never felt like a celebrity. Mm-hmm. I don't particularly care about any of that stuff. But something that I think has affected my mental health is that being thrown into these situations where you meet people and then they're gone a minute or two later. And not only that with your fans, where you're meeting them at meet and greets, but also going to these parties, which, what is it called?
So the meet and greet.
The networking parties,
okay,
where you're meeting somebody and there's always like a purpose to why you're speaking to each other. It's never just a friendly, oh, we might like each other. We might be interested in the same stuff. Yeah. There's always like a purposeful reason for why. There's always somebody wants to get something out of you, or you want to get something out of them. And there's just constantly been that since I was 20 years old.
Right.
And so I think what's happened in terms of mental health is that if somebody wants to talk to me, I almost feel a little bit apprehensive as to why. And
you're on guard.
That makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that's something I haven't been able to express until maybe this year.
Right.
I haven't been able to sort of zoom out enough to go, oh, that must have had a weird effect on my brain, meeting people that quickly, or having such short interactions, like expecting interactions to last a few minutes and then to be like, all right, cool. Maybe I'll email you. Like, you know what I mean? And then you'll see each other again in passing at something else, rather than actually meeting somebody and being really present with them in that moment and nothing else mattering and you not knowing what's going to come out of it, whether or not you're making a new friendship or whether or not it is superfluous. Like, you know, like a lot of the time when I've met new people, sometimes I feel a little bit like, I don't know if we're ever going to speak again. And there's something quite weird about that.
Mm.
About approaching a new person and not knowing, and almost being confident that it doesn't matter, that this interaction, you can just log it away and forget it. Like it's a kind of difficult one to describe because it's still quite a new thing that I'm expressing, but I definitely think that's taken a little toll on me in terms of my interactions with other human beings.
Yeah. And you mentioned this idea of being present. Obviously you've got a large following online on Twitter and Instagram. How are you when you release content online, whether it be through YouTube or whether you're, you know, on Twitter, Instagram, etc.? Are there any levels of anxiety that are associated with you posting stuff and sort of waiting for the responses and reactions?
I would say at the moment there isn't. I think that's probably been truthful in some way before. But at the moment, my views on YouTube aren't as high as they once were. Mm. Like on my personal channel, something would find its way to getting to around 100,000 views a video, which is pretty decent.
Mm.
I was always very happy with that. Even on Jack and Dean, like if something hits 100,000 views, I'm like, cool, I'm happy. That's like a nice number. But lately on my personal channel, because I've shifted my content so much to be much more film and cinema focused and, to be honest, reflecting much more of what my interests are, something that I've been wanting to do for years but didn't do. I can go back and look at old videos and see me going like, would you want to hear me talk about this stuff more? Yeah. And actually I can tell that that's me being like, I really want to be able to go really like in depth and almost academic on this stuff because I find it so interesting, but I don't know if anyone gives a shit. And then what I've done this year, because it makes me feel happy, is I've gone, I'm going to make that stuff because that's where I think I feel most comfortable and the stuff that I want to express and the stuff that I want to create. And the views have gone down because the audience obviously isn't there for that stuff and hasn't come to expect that stuff. But I don't feel really anything about that other than the people that are watching it are engaging with it. I feel really good about what I made.
Mm.
And I'm just going to keep that going rather than playing to an audience and trying to play the system or, you know, get views or whatever. I think I feel much more comfortable with what I'm making because of what it is rather than who's watching it or how many people are watching it.
Yeah, that makes complete sense. You know, you're an age now where you know yourself better and you feel comfortable putting out sort of what you're interested in. I guess there's going to be a real level of authenticity to that that people are going to be.
I think that's kind of it. Is that it's just about like it's kind of simple. It's just, if you make what you want to make, you're going to feel satisfied. You're going to feel happier rather than trying to fit into something that doesn't quite suit you.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. So in normal times, before in yesteryear, before lockdown or corona even existed, how would you find a sense of balance? What would you do, for instance, just to get your mind off work pressures and just to get some clarity or just a sense of peace? Do you have any sort of rituals, or do you do a specific exercise? I know you said you play squash with, you were used to play squash with Kyan. Do you have any regular routines such as that, that you need to keep you going?
Well, to be honest, the cinema was a little bit of my church, and I missed that very, very much. And I watched Once Upon a Time in Hollywood for the third time or something recently, and the sequence where Sharon Tate goes to the cinema and you see her like sort of dance into the cinema screen and find a seat, I found quite emotional to watch, because I was like, oh God, yeah, the cinema. I forgot how that felt. So yeah, I do. I that would always be like a place where I would like switch off, very easily switch off. Sometimes I would, yeah. Absolutely.
Find that liberating.
Yeah, it's lovely. And you don't need to like jump into conversation immediately. You can let things sink in. Yeah, I find that really, really therapeutic sometimes to go alone to the cinema. You know, the traditional one, seeing friends, like exercising has absolutely become something that I've done this year. It's obviously, we're in the third month or something now of this lockdown, so it's become much more of a home workout routine thing. And for that, I'm seeing like, how many pull-ups can I do? Like, it's just things like that, like with easy progressions. But actually, when I'm exercising, I find that my brain really focuses in on that moment, rather than, my brain doesn't start thinking about ideas or whatever. It does when I'm running. Like if I go for a run, my brain will like start to swim around and process different things in my head, whether they be creative ideas or personal stuff that's going on. But actually, when I'm exercising, I find that I really, really focus on that task.
If you're running,
cooking has become something.
Yeah, me too. Actually, I was going to say, when you're running, do you listen to music or podcasts, or do you just like to be totally present?
I don't take anything with me except for my keys to get back in the house.
Okay.
Yeah. So I almost like, I leave everything and just go, I'm going to go do this for 20, 25 minutes.
Right.
And yeah, that I used to listen to music, but actually I find it so much better to not do that.
I agree. It's something I've been doing. It just, because it feels like it's, I realized I was just blocking. It was another way to block things out.
Yeah.
And there's something like quite beautiful when you're just running and you can hear the sound of the birds or just people walking past, especially if you've been inside all day writing on your own. God, you want to hear the sounds of just life.
The world.
Exactly.
Yeah. I remember a teacher once saying to me something about look up, because a lot of the time, like, we're obviously eye level or down, but actually pay attention to the way that the buildings are shaped at the top of, you know, above you, and just little things like that. Like, we just don't pay attention to that stuff a lot more. And that's always stuck with me, just even the sentiment of it, of like, just look around. And being present, it seems to be a theme that's coming up quite a lot in this conversation, is that that's become really, really important to me. Is I think that I've, what you said, like, looked for distractions for a long time, and whether or not that be YouTube or movies or TV or whatever, like anything to sort of like quiet the thoughts down sometimes is just looking for a way to distract from that, when actually being present with that stuff, whether it be negative or positive, obviously the scarier stuff is the negative stuff, but actually being with it, although uncomfortable, doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing to do. And actually to sit with that stuff has been really, really helpful. So yeah, like, I guess some form of meditation, but not traditionally. I certainly, like, I have things that I listen to and certain people on YouTube. I'm very into ASMR. I don't know why, but like, that has been a part of my life for a long time. And it's not, it's sort of one of those things that I'll have, if I'm in that sort of mood, I'll actually just go and do mundane tasks. Like, I'll have it on in my headphones rather than using it to get to sleep. I'll have it on in my head, and it almost just soothes my head as I'm ironing or, you know, washing the pots or something.
Sure.
So it's things like that I sort of use to sort of get out of my own, you know, like, psyche sometimes.
Sure. Okay. And to wrap things up, I'm going to ask you the question I ask all the guests on that come on the podcast. What does the idea of, and it's, we have touched upon this throughout, but what does the idea of balance mean to you or not?
The idea of balance mean to me or not?
Yeah, I would always sort of put that in, just in case you go, I don't believe in balance, because, you know, each your own.
I think what balance doesn't mean is, I don't know. It's a very, very interesting thing to sort of try and define. My form of balance is about, I think, boundaries. And that goes for work, people, like certain, giving everything the space it deserves rather than allowing one thing to dominate what you're doing. So for me personally, I have definitely been a workaholic at some point in my life where I would edit throughout the day and into the night and be like, no, this is what I'm doing. When actually that's not healthy for me and it hasn't been good for me and it can make me pent up and stressed and all the rest of it. So it's about knowing when to close the laptop, when to switch off, especially because I'm self-employed and because I'm my own boss. It's about knowing when to get out of bed. It's about knowing when to go to bed. It's about being able to listen to my own feelings and go, I want to go and watch a movie at 1 p.m. in the afternoon, and I'll make up for that time later. As long as I'm not letting myself become a slob, it's okay to allow myself some rewards. And a part of it as well is you don't need to do one thing in order to reward yourself with another. It's that old mentality I have sometimes of you can have some time on the video game when you've done your homework. It's like, I'm not in fucking school anymore. I'm an adult who can make his own decisions and run his own life. So if I want to go and play a video game, I know that I'll do that for a certain amount of time and then I'll get bored and I'll want to go and do something else. But I will have scratched that itch. So I think it's just about listening to my own feelings and knowing what's best for me, not giving in to the negative thoughts that want me to just stay in bed all day. And that'll be good. That's what you need right now, just stay in bed all day. No, that's not helpful. But also it's not the other side of it. It's not somebody going, you need to be working all the time. You need to be fast paced. You need to get this shit done. Otherwise you're not worthwhile. It's absolutely listening to the center and allowing yourself to have whatever feels like what you need in that moment. That was really long-winded, but that is kind of
great.
A summation
great.
Of it.
Nailed it. All right, man. Well, look, thank you so much for coming on. It's been great speaking to you.
Thank you so much for having me, man. Perfect.
And there we have it. Jack Howard. Really enjoyed that conversation. Lots and lots of information there to take in. And it's great to talk to somebody who is highly creative, smart, ambitious, and is just making it happen for himself. So yeah, hope you enjoyed that conversation, guys. This week, I have mostly been reading Akala's book, Natives. After obviously what's been happening in the news and the protests and everything related to George Floyd and Black Lives Matter, I'm sure like many, many of you as well, have wanted to try and educate and inform myself so I can have a better understanding of the sort of history of racism in both the UK and the US and the black struggle. I've got many black friends. I kind of grew up going to sort of like garage and jungle raves, and I've got friends from all backgrounds, creeds and colors. However, it definitely occurred to me that I'm nowhere near knowledgeable or informed enough on this subject matter. It's something that's obviously been raised. We're not taught about, or is not on the school curriculum, national curriculum, and 100% should be. So I'm reading this book, and I've been following Akala across sort of social media for a long time, and he's such an intelligent and informative individual, and I highly recommend reading the book. So yeah, that's something that I've been enjoying very much this week. And I think, that's it for now. I will leave it on that. I've got a very interesting conversation in next week's episode with Josh Peters, the YouTube prankster who probably is most known for the prank on Katie Hopkins. So it's a really fascinating conversation. I think you're going to really enjoy it. So do check that one out, and hope you enjoyed the conversation. Until next time, see you later.
Balancing Acts is now made in association with The Comedy Crowd, who are a website and community that support independent comedy creators such as myself. I have a Comedy Crowd Short, which is a 2-minute video, one of my characters on their website. They showcase the best new videos on Comedy Crowd TV, which is comedycrowdtv.com, and across media platforms. So do go and check them out.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.